Off the Ball.
Your ma, like, she's great like that. She'll come in and help out and stuff all the time. But as I say, just to have that extra bit of independence as you get older, it's good to have.
There you go already, me ma. So you're getting a bit of dub into you.
No, well, we say that in Derry as well. So
they put you in the seat and 2 minutes later you're just on the show. It was quite surreal, to be honest. It still feels like a bit of a dream, you know. And I was kind of overwhelmed by the occasion, but it was enjoyable. I think I would have regretted it if I didn't go for it, you know. So I said I will. So yeah, interesting.
Our podcast is quite international, but you're coming to us from a cafe in Luxembourg. That's a dedication for the greatest league in the world.
Oh, I know, yeah, just nipped out of a meeting to take this call, so yeah, and then I'm in sunny Luxembourg, well not so sunny, but in Luxembourg in any case.
Ga was originally my sport when I was a youngster, and I really started taking up football seriously when I was 14, 15, 16. You know, Ga's always been there, played in the off-season, I played football, and then in the summer months I'd play the Ga.
The best League of Ireland podcast in the business. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
Yes, hello there. You're very welcome to episode 6 of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. My name is Jamie Moore, coming to you from Marconi House here in Dublin. We've got a packed show for you over the next hour. We're going to be speaking to a man who made the League of Ireland go viral across the world during the week. Dinny Corcoran from Bowes, about winning the Soccer Writers Player of the Month and on the same day appearing on Channel 4's Countdown. He'll tell us that story and how his mam actually made him do it. His manager, Keith Long, after their Leinster Senior Cup win over Shelburne at Tolka Park on Monday. And also the former club president and a man who now sits on the Dalyman Park Redevelopment Committee, Matt Devaney. He had an interesting tweet last week when Bowes had to turn away hundreds of fans outside their stadium because the game was just sold out, and they're planning to try and make room for more fans between now and the end of next season when they'll move to Tolka Park for a couple of years before moving back to the redeveloped Dalyman Park. We're going to be joined in studio in just a second by Shamrock Rovers midfielder Aaron McInniff, who has made a habit of scoring some spot kicks this season, most recently in their win over St Pat's at a packed Richmond Park on Friday. While our first division focus, we welcome Aaron Dobbs from Longford Town into the studio, former Shamrock Rovers and Wexford man as well. That's all on the way over the next hour, but we'll begin though with Aaron McInniff, who's beside me here in the studio in Dublin. Aaron, thanks for coming in your day off.
No worries, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much. So, Shamrock Rovers, you're at the top of the table at the moment. 4 wins, 1 draw, and 1 defeat. 2 penalties for yourself, a Panenka against your old club Derry and the winner against Pats on Friday. So, things are going well for you and for the team so far?
Oh, it's been a good start for us as a team. And I feel I've settled in personally myself down here, moving down from Derry. I knew a lot of lads, obviously, from playing against them, but as soon as I went in the change room, they've made me feel welcome, and I've settled in on the pitch as well. And I think as a team, like, we've started the season well, and hopefully we can just continue to do that as the games go on. Like.
Yeah, nice photo of you there celebrating that Panenka penalty, the first goal scored into the new stand at Tala. So let's talk about that firstly. When I had heard that you had chipped the penalty down the middle, I was like, He didn't do that. But you did, and we've seen recently in the Champions League and across the European leagues, Man City players doing it and others. When did the Panenka idea, and for those who don't know what a Panenka is, it's a little chip down the middle which makes the goalkeeper look a bit silly, but if he saves it, you're the one who looks silly.
No, well, I'd done it last year in the Brandywell, whenever we played Bray, but we were 2-0 up at the time, I think, and that was the first time I've ever done it. I've took penalties throughout my career, really, but it's just something that I've always wanted to do. And when I done it last year, then obviously the one in Tala against Derry, it's just whenever we got the penalty and I was going to hit it, a lot of the players who I would know went straight to the keeper, and they were obviously telling him which side he should go to or whatever. But what I had in my head that he was always going to just pick a side. So I had two things in my head. Well, it was really smash it down the middle or else dink it down the middle. And I just felt like I had more control by dinking it down the middle. And thankfully, Dave, then it went in.
Yeah, now your manager, Stephen Bradley, said afterwards, if you missed, he'd have sent you back down the road on the bus with Derry. How nervous were you when you decided in your head, right, I'm going to do this and this is what I'm going to do. And if I score, it's going to be brilliant. I think the game was 1-0 at the time, so it was tighter, was it?
Yeah,
so if you missed the chance to equalise, you scored. But what's the actual feeling in your tummy when you're actually about to take it?
No, well, I think like at 1-0, Derry were actually coming into the game a bit in the second half as well. And when we got the penalty, if I score, game over. And there wasn't really a nervous feeling. I just felt like if I didn't get down the middle, I always thought that the keeper was going to dive, and I felt like I was in control of the situation if I didn't get, because you never know, if you smash it with your laces, it can go over the bar, it can go anywhere really. But I also knew like if it went in with a dink, then it would have been quality, especially in the new stand as well. The fans were right behind it. Like.
Yeah, so things then moved from that penalty a couple of weeks later to the winner against Pats on Friday. Before we speak about that penalty, just, I know you've spoken after the game about the atmosphere at Richmond. It was the biggest crowd that Pats have had in like a number of years. The whole four sides of the ground full. Again, similar to Bowes, which we speak about shortly, game was sold out. Some people couldn't get tickets. And that was your first experience of a proper away derby, because you'd played against Bowes, but because two of the stands are kind of empty, it's a little bit different.
I think for me, the game against Pats was probably one of the best atmospheres I've ever played in the league. Probably because it's so tight, the fans are really in on top of you. It's obviously a derby, and then we won, so it made it even better. But as you say, like playing at Bowes, it was a great atmosphere, but like it gives that, there's not really that togetherness with the fans and the players, you know what I mean, because of it's so open and there's only the two sides. But now the Pats game, like the Rovers brought a lot of fans down, filled it, and it's nearly, for me coming down here from Derry to go and play, say, Pats or Bowes or whatever, it's nearly like, my feeling of it's nearly like playing an extra home game, because all the Rovers fans go to watch the game, obviously because it's in Dublin. Whereas when I was at Derry, you wouldn't get as many travelling fans down for many reasons, but no, I really enjoyed playing in it, and like as I say, we got the one, so it made it even better.
Yeah, and I'm sure that might be one of the reasons why you joined Rovers as well. I know you're linked with other clubs in the off-season, but just the fact that you've said the away fans travel, you know, so far for these games, and to be able to play, like when you were with Derry, if you were coming to play against Pats or against Bowes, there'd be a very small away crowd, and even the home crowd wouldn't be as up for it because it's not a derby match. So to come and to play in those atmospheres in like two of your first five or six games, I'm sure is really, you know, in your own head, made you think, made the right decision to come down and play here.
Well, don't get me wrong, like when I was at Derry, like the travelling fans that did travel, they made great atmospheres out of what they could, and like I'm sure all the players were fully appreciative of that, like at the time, and they still will continue to do so, because Derry's obviously a big club in the league. But I just think, like whenever I came down here, obviously having so many teams in around Dublin and stuff, I have noticed a difference in terms of them two games already, and it is something that I enjoy playing with a big crowd and an atmosphere, and any player will tell you that they would rather play in front of a big crowd than no one at the game. And like I've also noticed coming down here that whenever we're playing games, like there's always an extra edge to the games. I don't know for whatever reason it is, it's just like I just feel like every game's like a massive game. As you said, like coming down from Derry to play a Dublin team, it's not a derby. Whereas these games they're huge, like, and they come thick and fast, and in our league, because there's only 10 teams, so no, it's good and I've enjoyed it so far.
Now, Aaron, a few times since we've been chatting, you've used the words come down here, but people may not know by your accent, your dad is actually a Dub, and you do have some history in Dublin, so moving to Dublin, you've signed a long-term contract with Rovers as well, so you'll be here for the next couple of years. You have some experience of living in this city through your dad, and he was a Dub before, he's still a Dub, but before he moved up to Derry and raised you guys there as your family.
Well, he's from Crumlin, well, Dolphins Barn, and then moved to Crumlin, so we would have came down when we were younger, and obviously knew bits and pieces of of Dublin, but I still use my sat nav whenever I'm driving, and I wouldn't really know it that well, but I'm getting used to it, and it's nearly like a smaller version of London, and I've lived in London as well, so I enjoy it down here. There's a lot of things to do, and my girlfriend, she's moved down, she's enjoying it as well, but obviously I've got still my granny, she's down here, and my auntie as well, so you have them small bits of home comforts, like you can go over to their house or whatever, but no, it's been good so far, and like I'm sure my dad's happy as well, like that I'm playing down here, because he'll be down more often.
Yes, indeed. And I know your mum, when speaking to you, grabbing a coffee in the studio before we came in, was a little bit concerned that you might not be able to cook for yourself and clean for yourself. But you've proved so far in your couple of months living in your apartment near Tallaght Stadium that you're okay for the moment.
Oh, well, her and my brothers, they would have given me a bit of stick saying, oh, how are you going to last out on your own and stuff. But no, it is the first time I've been out on my own living, and I think it's helped me a lot because you become a lot more independent. I haven't struggled really. The cooking's been good. The two of us, me and Ellen, we've shared cooking dinners and cleaning up and stuff like that. No, so it's been good. I actually cooked a steak last night, which was lovely. So really, it's I'm happy to be sort of settled into my own place and that. And that sort of helps you with, I suppose, your game as well, really, because you can nearly do what you want when you want because it's your own place. Not saying like moving back into my ma's house in Derry was bad. It was amazing. You get everything handed to you, but just having that extra bit of independence at my age, as I'm like 23 now, it's been a good help.
So if Mrs. McAneff is listening, the next time you end up going back to Derry, she's going to poison you for your comments there.
No. To be fair, she was down. She's down a few weeks ago, and she had the apartment gleaming. She was just cleaning it from head to toe. So, no, me ma, like, she's great like that. She'll come in and help out and stuff all the time. But as I say, just to have that extra bit of independence as you get older, it's good to have.
There you go already, me ma. So you're getting a bit of dub into you.
No, well, we say that in Derry as well, so.
Okay, nice. Last one on the move to Dublin before we speak about your time playing up north and playing in England and also some of the stuff in terms of your time at Derry. How have you found being in Dublin over the last little while? I know you're very impressed with the whole Roadstone Academy at Rovers and the setup there, and we spoke about the apartment and your missus being here and being able to cook and stuff, but what have the main differences been from living kind of at home in Derry to making the trip up here and, you know, making a commitment to be here for the next 3 years at least?
Well, I think in terms of the football side, like Roadstone's great. It's a great place to go in every morning. The facilities are quality, and you know where you're based every morning. And sometimes when I was at Derry, we used to travel to different pitches to train and stuff. Until maybe last year, whenever the pitch became 3G surface, yeah. Then we could train at the stadium. But down here, like Roadstone, you know where you're going every morning. You know where you're going to get. The coaches have been more than helpful to me, and I said that the players have been as well. But I just felt like whenever I came down here to have a look around in the off season, I just felt that it was the best place for me to come and improve as a footballer. And I think whenever you've got a setup the way Shamrock Rovers have, you don't really have any excuse to go and work hard every day and enjoy your football.
So you grew up in Derry, playing football in Derry as a young lad. Talk to us a little about that and your first kind of experiences of football. And I suppose, you know, we always speak about when you're kids and you're learning to play football with your mates in different parks and places and playing, you know, schoolboy football. And school football is where you first, you know, start to decide, I love this and I might actually be quite good at it.
Well, I would have kicked the ball about whenever I was really young. And then it was actually one of my classmates when I was in primary school. He just asked me, do you play for a football club or anything? And I said no, and then he invited me to go to play with a team called Don Bosco's, which is a junior club in Derry. Went there when I was maybe about seven or eight, and played there throughout until I was like 15. But like, I was always when I was younger, I was like quite chubby, and I played centre back, and like I got to a stage when I was like 12, played for like the Derry and District teams in the Foyle Cup and stuff, and I had a bad injury whenever I was young. I had to get cartilage taken out of my knee, and it's unusual for someone so young for that to happen to. And came back from that, and we played like it was a training game and like a training session with some Liverpool coaches. They were over for the weekend. It was a Halloween. We were off school and stuff, so they took us for a few sessions. And after the sessions, one of the coaches spoke to my dad and said, look, if your son loses a bit of weight, I think he could be a player.
Okay.
And like for a parent to sort of come across and say that to their son at that age, it's quite sensitive, really. But my parents, they just told me what he said, and I just took it under my own head. And from then, like, I just, like, I turned on the, like, I just so motivated and just wanted to do well, like. And we had the Foyle Cup, like, in the summer of the following year. Lost a load of weight, played the Foyle Cup, and then sort of scouts and that started watching me from there. It was kind of crazy, really. Like, obviously I worked hard, like, really hard, but didn't really expect it. And then you had like FAI scouts and IFA scouts and stuff starting to like chat to me, my and dad, and like scouts from England and stuff. And then that's sort of whenever I started like kicking on a bit. But just playing like in Derry, like when I was younger, it was, you don't really think of them things. I never really thought of them and just went out to enjoy football.
So sitting here now, you're in really good shape as an attacking midfielder. You don't, and I can't see in my head,
yeah,
as you said in your own words, a chubby centre-back.
Yeah.
Like it was... You've obviously, you know, the advice that they took then has really, you know, resonated in your head. But tell me about that time when you're a kid and you're trying to be a footballer and someone says to your parents, listen, he's fat, he can't play football at a good level unless he loses weight. Like,
well, the way the fella said it was like, it's nearly like a way, fair play to the fella for saying it, because... when my parents were honest with me, it really went into my head and stuck. And it was like a sole focus to go and like get really fit and stuff. And now I'd be probably at the fittest now than I've ever been. But like from when I got fit at that stage, and was always like one of the fittest in my teams. But it was like. It's hard for like younger kids. Obviously, going, you get like people like calling you fat and stuff, but that's just what happens. Like, and maybe don't listen to them people. Like, that's what I would say, because I never listened to anybody, like, other than coaches and stuff like that. And it's weird because I've actually never spoke about this in an interview before, but it would be like it's worthwhile talking about, because I'm sure it happens a lot. And maybe some people don't get that bit of advice, and they could be a better player for it, you know what I mean?
So, when you're trying to play football at that age, and, you know, you have your peers slagging you, and it happens, you know, school playgrounds and summer camps all the time, and you're now, 10 years later, or I'm not sure the exact timeline, a professional footballer, full-time, playing in the League of Ireland, you know, underage international, have played in the Europa League and stuff. How do you look back on that time and those people who, as kids do, decided that they were going to slag you, and you used all of that as a mechanism to become what you have now, with, I'm sure, plenty more ambition to go?
Well, I don't really look and begrudge anyone. It's not really the type of person I am. Everybody goes through life in different ways, and they choose their own path, and that comes down to what way they live their life and stuff like that. But I put a focus on myself and like the people who are close to me. That's just the way I am as a person. I actually remember one fella when like I was young, we played together, and he used to always give me a bit of stick, like, and then whenever I came back from England at one stage, I went to KFC for a burger, and he served me in KFC, like, so, and he said, oh look, we've changed places, sort of thing, like, so. But you just have a laugh about that kind of stuff, because when you, as you get older, you don't take that kind of thing serious anymore. But I don't really look back on it in any bad way, because most of the boys that I grew up playing with, I would not be like close mates, but I would, if I seen them, I would speak to them.
So you become a young footballer and you play for Institute in the Northern Irish League. And then an opportunity comes to move to Tottenham. Yeah. And your little brother Jordan is now away in England playing for Arsenal, who we'll speak about hopefully in a minute, and hope to speak to him maybe on the show here in the next little while. But you move to Tottenham, Tim Sherwood's involved at the club, and comparisons to a young Roy Keane.
Yeah. No, well, he obviously came out and said that. I went over there on trial twice, and the both, well, the first time I went over, I played a match, like an in-house game with the reserve team who he would have looked after, and always felt like Tim was the type of man that you could go and speak to. He was always approachable and stuff, and it was obviously nice whenever you hear someone say that, like whenever you're at a young age. But whenever I went over there, learnt a lot in England. Obviously moving from Institute to go and play there, I was obviously playing men's football, although it's not the same sort of standard as what like the level at Spurs was. There's a big difference between the change rooms, because I went over after being in a men's change room where there's a lot of banter and just a lot of different banter than what there would be in a youth team change room. So it did take me a while to get used to it. I was obviously mates with a load of older fellas and stuff here then, and like going back and they play at my own age, even though the players were quality, like technically gifted and stuff like that, it took me a while to just adjust it. But it was a good experience going over the Spurs, and made me learn a lot about myself as a person, and it definitely improved me as a footballer technically, and I was actually only back from injury then. That was one of my first games back. Just Sean Kavanagh played in that game.
Yeah, for those who are listening to the podcast as opposed to watching, we're looking at a picture of Aaron playing for Spurs against Fulham, and Sean Kavanagh, who's now one of Aaron's teammates at Rovers, and I have said is one of the best League of Ireland players, yeah, who was on the podcast last year, is playing against you.
He played in that game. The experience I had over there, I had a bad injury in me last year, which didn't really help, but over the course of the 3 years, it was a good experience for me, and I enjoyed it.
So your injury and whatever happens, and it happens to so many Irish people, like in your seat a couple of weeks ago in an interview that's kind of done quite well on the podcast with Keelan Dillon about his time over there and everything that happened. You've come home and you signed for your hometown team. Yeah. One of the club legends, Peter Hutton, is a manager at the time, and you're back and you're in the League of Ireland for the first time, trying to bounce back from England. And up until this season, you were a player for your hometown team. How would you kind of reflect on all of that time? You played under a couple of managers and played in Europe, lost your captain, Ryan McBride, through horrendous debts, effectively, a couple of years ago as well. And it's a time you look back on it with kind of mixed memories.
I signed at Derry under Peter Hutton. Just went on the train 1 week whenever I was back to stay fit, and they offered me a deal, and I just signed to go. And he told me I would play, so signed there. Then he'd left after a few weeks, and Paul Hegarty took over, and I didn't really get many games. And to be honest, I felt like I struggled in the first 6 months. Even in the games that I played, just didn't feel like I was given what I could give, and it was really frustrating because you'd come back from England, and I think when players come back from England to this league, fans' expectations are massive, and nobody really realises that these boys coming back are only young men starting off in their careers, and it's hard to get going again when you've just come back after a setback. But I think as the player, you have to sort of try and be mentally strong and get through it, because you obviously see a lot of players that come back and then just sort of fall off the ladder. And I came back with an intention to do well, and maybe for the first 6 months didn't go well, but the off season really helped me, because I had obviously 2 months off that first off season. When I just came back, it was the first 2 months, I would say, in a long time that I actually got to be like an 18 or 19 year old and just go and enjoy myself. Went on holiday, just went out with my mates, chilled with my mates, whatever. And it's probably the first time in a while that I just felt like I was doing normal things that people that age would do. And when you get that sort of, whenever you sort of get past that stage, like, I was ready to come in the pre-season and go and have a good crack at this. And Kenny Shields obviously came in as the manager at that stage, and he was brilliant with me. He put me in the team, and then I sort of kicked on from there. and like the things that happened during my time there, my memories were good memories at Derry City. And as you mentioned, like obviously Ryan passed away, which was awful, but and then obviously Josh Daniels, his family passed away as well. So, well, his mum and his sister and his two cousins. So that was, there were some tough times, but overall, I would say it was good for me to come back to the league, definitely. And it was a time I enjoyed, and playing for your hometown club is really good, look.
Yeah, we've just seen an image on screen there of Ryan McBride's shirt at the Brandywell Stadium. Here's another one there of the Brandywell Pride McBride 5 jersey, and the players still at the moment wear McBride 5, and yeah, that's actually a game. We're looking at a photo of Ryan scoring for Derry in a 1-0 win over Shamrock Rovers on March the 10th, 2017 in Tallaght Stadium, a game I was at.
Yeah.
And 9 days later, he's found in his bed and he's dead. And again, didn't plan this, but the anniversary, the second year anniversary, is actually in a couple of days' time, because we were speaking on the 13th of March.
Yeah.
What sort of words would you use to describe kind of that period? Because you'd beaten Drogheda 4-0 in the Brandywell, and the next morning your captain, one of your best mates, is dead, and you're going into his house to kind of say goodbye to him.
Well, like we played that game against Shamrock Rovers, and it just came up in my Facebook, like the timeline memories thing, that the Dundalk game was straight after that Rovers game, and Ryan actually scored against Dundalk, and we won 3-1 in McGinn Park, and then obviously played Drogheda, and we had a really, really good start to the season. We won every game, so we were thinking like this could be a good year for us. But never forget on the Sunday when I got the phone call, it was actually Conor McDermott texted me, and he said, do you see what happened? And I just said no, and then he rang me. I was sleeping at the time, and I had a missed call from him. I just thought he was going to ring me and
chat about the game,
for a chat. And then he rang again, and I thought something must be wrong here, so I answered the phone, and he was kind of crying on the phone, but I was like, what's wrong with you? And he said, Ryan's dead. And I was like, Ryan who? And he said, McBride, obviously. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, he must be taking the hand out of me or something. And I checked online and stuff, and then I got a phone call from the club, and they say that it was true. And it's one of the hardest things ever, because obviously it's someone who's your mate, like your teammate and your captain, and then they see him that morning for recovery, and then he was just going home like we all were, and then he just went for a sleep and didn't wake up. It was, I can't really put it into words.
Yeah, I remember that night we were at the International Football Awards in RTE, all the journalists, and getting to speak to the players, and the news came through again on the Sunday, and ironically this Sunday the International Football Awards are on again, and that'll be the kind of around the exact time of the anniversary. And you know, at that time the whole football community comes together. The manager, Kenny Shields, whose time at Derry probably didn't end as he would have wanted at that time, like he was a beacon of strength to all you guys. I remember him, you know, speaking at the funeral and speaking at the time, and just thought, God, how strong is he? And then to lead the team back onto the football pitch and to continue to play, and there's so much media attention around it, and there's so many people at the funeral, and it's a massive, massive story. I think Martin McGuinness had died the same week, and there was funerals on in the same city around the same time for those two people. Like, that must all be a blur to you to kind of look back at, well, I've played a football match with my mate, my captain, and a few days later I'm at this massive funeral.
Yeah,
that's his.
Yeah, it's really, as I say, it's hard to put on the words. Like, all you have to do is look at his family, like at that time, and think of them first and foremost, because like, especially like his father, no father wants to bury their son, and his family are lovely. I've grown to meet them all, obviously through the foundation and stuff. But like, I just remember we were supposed to play Bray again on, I think it was a Tuesday or something. Obviously that game was called off, and all the players went to the funeral and stuff. It was the same day as Martin McGuinness's funeral, so Derry was absolutely packed. It was two massive funerals. And as just as you touched on, like, Kenny he was amazing for it, to be honest. And like, for all the players, he gave them a lot of support in any way he could, really. Because it was like on the 18th of April, the next month, like, my godfather passed away, and then a few weeks after that, Hugo Ekiog passed away, which was my coach at Spurs.
Spurs, yeah.
So I had three in like that period of time, and it was just kind of like a slap in the face, something I'd never experienced before. Didn't know really how to deal with it or what to do. And to be fair, like, you obviously have your family around you, and you have your girlfriend or your brothers or your close mates. But like Kenny Shields, he did help me a lot, and as did the club. They helped me out and gave me some support that I needed. And like, ironically, looking back at that sort of period when this was happening, when I did get like playing football again, it was probably a few of the best months. Like, I've actually played, scoring a lot, playing really well and stuff. And then, like, at the end of that season, I ended up being up for Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year. And I'll never forget that sort of period where them events were happening, because it's so hard, but you get some sort of feeling they just go and play through it or do well or something. And you hear a few stories like that, but whenever it actually happens, like, I don't know, you just find some sort of strength within yourself to go ahead and play. And like, it was a difficult period for, touching on Ryan again, like, for the club and for everyone around the city, because he was known as a legend, really. He worked in a bar, and like on a weekend.
I'm sure you were there once or twice, were you?
That's what I'm saying. I've actually got selfies while he's working and I'm on a night out. And I actually remember, like, just stuff like, if my younger brother was going to get in or something, he was underage, you'd text Ryan, he'd come down and bring him in or whatever. Like, just, he was an absolute legend and a gentleman. Like, and for someone to be taken away like that, it's cruel, really. But you have them type of memories they live on with, and I'm sure everybody will remember him for what he was.
Yeah, I'll ask this last question, Aaron, over two parts. And I know you guys got the opportunity to actually say goodbye to Ryan when he was still in his bed, in his house, and that's clearly a very intimate moment, because only certain people would have been asked to do that. Is that something you're happy you did? And, you know, I know, like, one of my very close friends died, and unfortunately it was a closed coffin and we weren't able to see him and whatever had happened. But for you guys to be able to actually go up and to see him, is that something you look back on and go, that's a memory that I will remember for being able to say goodbye? And secondly, what will your best memories of him be? Because you played with him for so long, and now a couple of years on, I'm sure you've had time to, and at different times, I'm sure different kind of things flash into your head of the good times as well.
I think going into that room that night, it's just a bit of closure, really. You actually see it for yourself, and makes you believe, obviously, it's true, because it's hard to believe that kind of stuff, especially when he played a game the day before and trained that morning, or was in training for recovery that morning. It is hard to believe. And seeing him lying there, just looked like he was sleeping, really. Like, and it's hard. It was hard, but for all the boys, I'm sure they'll say that it was good to get that closure in some sort of way, if you know what I mean. And it's obviously, it's not a nice thing to see, but it is what it is. And like, for being close to someone like that, I think it's nice in a way to see it for closure in your own sort of mind, like. And then,
yeah.
The memories of Ryan, I've got a lot, like, on and off the pitch.
Just give me the best one.
The best one.
And one that you're allowed to tell us, if it happened in the bar at 4 a.m, maybe not.
Well, there was one on the pitch that I've said before in an interview, I'll never forget it. We played Glenavon, we had a mid-season break, and We played Glenavon, the friendly, after the break. Just a friendly game, get the legs going again before the league starts up, and I think we might have been 1-0 up or something. We were just passing the ball about, and I give someone a bad pass, and he shouted at me and said, "What the are you doing?" Like, and I just said, "It's only a friendly, like, calm down." And he said, "No, if you're going to do something, do it right." And I was just like, well, I'm not going to argue back with him, am I? So that's one thing that I've, like, stuck in my head. Plenty of other things on the pitch as well, like it's tackles and stuff and headers, but that just that one thing, and I thought, he's a captain that nobody is going to say anything back to, really. And that's just the type of man he was. And then just we actually went on holiday together in Portugal during the break the year before he passed away. Just remember dancing top of a bar with him. Now there was plenty of good memories from that holiday, but that, like, so many memories with someone so big and what he did, and I would just remember him as a legend. Like,
yeah, and some great stuff around the Ryan McBride Foundation as well, which people can read about online. Will we finish on the football? Shamrock Rovers Sligo on Friday, 8 o'clock, and tell I'm going to be there. Will I be seeing an Aaron McInniff Panenka? And if the Sligo Rovers goalkeepers are listening or watching, close your ears now.
No, hopefully I get one from open play on Friday.
Yeah, have all your goals been penal so far?
Well, so far this season, yeah. But not all my goals in the league. But no, I'm looking forward to the game on Friday. It's obviously another big game for us, coming off the back of a good one. And it's just important to try and keep the momentum going. Because if you build up momentum and around the change room, it builds confidence within the squad, and everybody wants to push for a place in the team, and that's only a good thing for us as players, and it obviously gives the managers or the manager and the coaches a headache when it comes to picking the squad. But I'm looking forward to the game. I'm sure all the other boys, and hopefully we can get 3 points.
Aaron McInniff, thanks a million. We've just seen a photo of you there on screen lifting the EA Sports Cup with Derry City at the end of last season, so hopefully some trophies at the end of this year. Thanks for coming in, hopefully. Being so honest. Cheers, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie, thank you.
Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast, brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Yeah, it's the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore. Thanks very much to Aaron McInniff for joining us in studio. Now, the Premier Division has been interesting over recent weeks because the crowds have been so good, and none more so than Bohemians. And in a few minutes' time, we're going to hear from the man who's one of their main men in terms of the Dalyman Park redevelopment, Matt Devaney, and also the Bows manager, Keith Long. But firstly, Dinny Corcoran appeared on Countdown on Channel 4 this week, and it kind of went viral on Twitter and stuff like that because he was named the League of Ireland's Player of the Month, and on the same day became a contestant on Countdown. So I've been asking him exactly how that came about. Dinny, tell me more.
So my mum is a big fan of the show. She always has been for years, and when I was growing up as a kid, I'd kind of just watch it with her, you know. I'd be in the same room when it's on the telly, so she always thought I was quite good at it. So she's been saying for ages that I should go on it and stuff, and whatever, you know, kind of laughed it off. And then probably about, I think it was last October maybe, she went and applied for me online or whatever. And I thought nothing of it, you know. She told me, I applied for you, you know, whatever. And I said, yeah, okay, whatever. So then I think it was the week after, she said, right, they're ringing you today to do an online test or exam or whatever. So I was like, oh, okay, it's kind of getting real now. And so they rang me and whatever, done it over the phone. And he then, straight after, he said on the phone, he said, yeah, okay, right, you're going to be on the show, you're good enough or whatever. So then it kind of was getting very real. And so that was it. They gave me a date, booked the flights and accommodation for me. I had to fly over to, it was in Salford over in England. So went over with just myself and the mother. I was in the off season, so I wasn't missing training or anything. And that was it. Then went into the studio. Went on, lost my first game, as you've all seen. I was actually I was very nervous, to be honest, so that had an effect. But Yeah, that was it. It was a bit of a crazy experience, but yeah, the reaction's been huge, to be honest. I didn't think it was going to be that big. I did try to keep it quiet, but I should have known better. I should have known it was going to get out in the end. But yeah, I'm not on Twitter now, but I've seen it was trending and stuff like that, and I've seen a lot of posts about it, especially because I was collecting the Player of the Month award that day as well. So a lot of funny ones, and yeah, the boys at training gave me a bit of stick, all right, as expected. But I don't care. Yeah, on the show itself was, yeah, it was pretty straightforward. You just go in that day and you kind of watch the person or two playing before you. And then, yeah, you just, they put you in the seat and 2 minutes later you're just on the show. It was quite surreal, to be honest. It still feels like a bit of a dream, you know. And I was kind of overwhelmed by the occasion, but it was enjoyable. I think I would have regretted it if I didn't go for it, you know, so I said I will. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, that is Dinny Corcoran. Great stuff from Dinny. Now, in a moment, we're going to hear from Matt Tavani. But first, our Darren Cleary caught up with the Boesboth Keith Long after their win over Shelburne in the Leinster Senior Cup at Tolka Park on Monday.
Keith, are you pretty pleased with what you saw tonight from your side?
Yeah, I think it was a good performance. I thought it was a half-decent game. Certainly, we got 2-0 up quite early in the game and probably should score another couple of goals before Shelburne get an equaliser, to be fair. Or sorry, they got their opening goal, their only goal. I felt we got a little bit sloppy for probably 8 to 10 minutes of the first half, having gone 2-0 up, and, you know, allowed Shelburne, you know, the chance, the opportunity to come back into the game. But we got the third goal fairly quickly after they got the goal, and thought we ran out comfortable winners in the end.
How often would this 11 have played together? Would they play together often? Because they looked like they had a bit of familiarity, and they certainly played like they did as well at times.
Not often, obviously, because a lot of those boys haven't played a huge amount of minutes in the Premier Division this year. So, but they, you know, Paddy Kirk and Andy Lyons have been with us for a good number of years now. Aaron Barry is new to the club, but very professional, very thorough professional. So organised the back four, middle of park. Robbie McCourt's been with us for a little while now. So our two wide players I thought were fantastic, particularly in the first half. And obviously they've been around the club, and you know, Swanee and Sanborn up front, I thought that looked a potent partnership. So it was a good performance. Shelburne obviously changed their lineup too. So yeah, we're pleased to get into the next round of the competition because it gives us more games for the boys to continue to improve.
And overall, the start of the season, has it exceeded whatever expectations you laid down for yourself as a manager and for your players?
Well, we're pleased with the start, but you know, we're 5 games into the season, so we've drawn the last 2 games. We had a difficult game down in Cork and away to Dundalk in the next 2 weeks, so that will really give us an indication of where we're at after those 2 games.
Yeah, tough run of fixtures as well, because of Dublin Derby out the other side of that after you play Cork and Dundalk. What's going to be the focus, I suppose, over the next couple of weeks?
Well, we want to try and go down and look at Cork and get something out of the game. You know, we'll have confidence going into that game. Down there, we know it'll be tough. You know, Cork are still a good side despite their indifferent start to the season. Obviously, they did a good win up in Ballybuffet on Friday. So, you know, it's going to be very, very tough down there. But, you know, we have to look at that and try and get something out of the game if we possibly can to keep this run that we're on going.
I mean, it would have been a tough start in a lot of ways, because you're playing teams that could be around you in later parts of the season with the likes of Finn Harps and UCD earlier on. Are you pleased with the way you navigated that couple of games?
Well, we've got 11 points after 5 games, so we've had 3 wins and 2 draws. It's been a good start, and you know, I can't really labour the point. You know, we've played 5 games. It's very early in the season. You know, we're not getting carried away.
Dinny had a good personal accolade today. He was named Player of the Month. He must have been delighted not only with his contribution, but that little piece of silverware for himself to show what a good start he's had.
Yeah, absolutely. Really pleased for him. You know, James Talbot was in there in contention as well, so he's had a great start to the season for us. So fantastic for Dinny. It's a great personal accolade for him. I think it's his first ever Player of the Month award, so really pleased for him. But it'd be great if we can get him onto the pitch on Friday night and he can get another goal for us.
You probably don't have a lot of time to sit around watching daytime TV, but did you find out he was on Countdown today?
Like everybody else, we found out through social media. Interesting, you know. So I didn't know Dinny. You know, he's quite articulate, Dinny, in his own way. So obviously he has a penchant for is that the right word? Penchant for daytime TV. Yeah. So you know,
he could definitely make it out of a jumble of letters anyway. If
yeah. Listen, yeah. Good luck to him.
Matt Tavani, welcome to the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. Matt, how are you?
Not too bad, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for having a chat with us. Matt, our podcast is quite international, but you're coming to us from a cafe in Luxembourg. That's a dedication for the greatest league in the world.
Oh, I know, yeah. Just nipped out of a meeting to take this call. So, yeah, and then I'm in sunny Luxembourg. Well, not so sunny, but in Luxembourg in any case.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for having a chat with us, Matt. Of course, former member of the Bohemians Committee, and he's now still sitting on the Dalymount Development Steering Committee. And an interesting tweet from Matt after Bohemians' most recent home match, where we understand they had to stop a lot of fans being able to go to the game because the game was actually sold out. And Matt's tweet read, "We're going to have to sort out Dalier in the short term to cope with crowds. Absolute travesty that we have to turn people away. It's a good problem, but a problem nonetheless that needs sorting." And Matt, your tweet has had lots of engagement from different people. Just explain to us your thoughts on what's going on recently, because your home games so far have all been full and sold out. And because a couple of the stands at Dalymount Park are not safe to use, you've actually had to turn away fans.
Yeah, and as I said, it's a good problem to have, but it's something we need to address. I suppose we're kind of victims of our own success in recent years. We've done a lot of work in the community, a lot of work with young schoolboy clubs, etc. So that engagement has paid off, and I think there's a general buzz around League of Ireland lately, and crowds are up across the board. You see it at Pats, you see it at Rovers. So we're no different, and our crowds have gone up substantially this year. So we're struggling to cope a little bit to get them all in, to be honest with you. So we're going to have to look at it. Everyone knows Dalier is creaking a little bit at the minute. The development is still a little bit down the road. So my tweet was basically saying, okay, in light of the development a little bit away, let's see what we can do in the short term to accommodate people. Because while it's great that people are getting turned away, we want to get those people inside the ground. We want to get them in, watching those games. And from a financial perspective as well, we need that cash, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose what people need to understand is that the game against Shamrock Rovers, which was your biggest attendance of the season, 3,594 at that, is because Shamrock Rovers brought a massive away crowd. You also played against Finn Harps at home, and most recently against Derry, and they wouldn't bring as many fans as Shamrock Rovers, but you have to keep the home fans and the away fans away from each other as such, and that's why the capacity is a little bit reduced for the last couple of games, simply because the away team didn't bring as many fans.
Yeah, see, that's the nail on the head there, Jamie. Because of the infrastructure at Dalymount, and we only have the two active stands currently, and we need that level of segregation. Away fans have to go into the Des Kelly, and our home fans come into the Jody. But what we're seeing is the Jody is not sufficient for our home fans now. So we're just going to have to look at something. And I got plenty of interaction on Twitter, a lot of suggestions about splitting the Des Kelly, about doing some remedial work to the Connacht Street side. About giving away fans Section A in the Jody and putting the overflow of our own fans in the Des Kelly. So we're looking at all those, and we've tossed those ideas around ourselves. So ideally, though, you'd like something. All of those suggestions are kind of based on a game-by-game basis. Ideally, you'd like a one-cap-fits-all solution where okay, that's your model. Your home fans go in the Jody and your away fans go somewhere else and everybody's accommodated. So we're looking at solutions. We have to be cognizant that Dalymount is getting flattened in a couple of years, so the budgetary constraints of what we can do, it would not make sense to put a large investment into Dalymount in the short term. So we're going to have to be clever. We're going to have to think of innovative ways of doing it. And I think there's solutions out there. And I suppose the next step is to try and come up with a plan and sit down with the council and discuss.
And Matt, for people listening, just explain to us the situation with Dalymount at the moment in terms of why, obviously, you know, the old terrace behind the goal on the right, as you look at the pitch from the main stand, from the Jody stand, has been closed ever since I can remember going to Dalymount. But back previously, I remember even when Matt Doherty played that famous game for Bows against Wolves, would have been back like 9-10 years ago. At that time, the Connacht stand, I think, would have been still open, and there are still seats in it, but the only people allowed up there are the people in the TV gantry. So why is that closed, and is there any possibility of that reopening in the next couple of years before the place is knocked down?
Yeah, so you know, as part of licensing requirements, the stadium has to get a stadium certificate. So I think, I'm going back now from memory here, but I think around 2009-2010, the guys come in and do the stadium cert, realised that the Connacht Street stand wasn't fit for purpose, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Connacht Street stand, the top tiers of it is supported by, I suppose, levers or arches at the back of the stand, and they're unsafe to hold a significant amount of weight. And then on the bottom two tiers, there's no immediate access to pitch level, so you have to build some sort of kind of ramp up to that. To your earlier point about the shopping centre ends, well, that's not owned by Dalymount anymore. The shopping centre owned that, so that's out of bounds, no matter what condition it's in. But that's it in a nutshell. There was a lot of, at the time in 2010, we looked at getting their media work done, but we were in a different place financially, and it wasn't possible. So we may need to look at it again. But then again, it comes back to my earlier point: how much money are we or the council willing to put in for a ground that's going to get flattened in a couple of years?
Yeah, because I was having a conversation with a few people on Twitter from both Shelburne and Bohemians myself in recent days. I was at Shells in the Leinster Senior Cup against a really young Bowes team, another fantastic win for you guys on Monday, and there was a free kick scored by Dale Rooney from Shells, and I videoed it on my phone and I put it on Twitter, and straight away I thought, God, the background looks so bad, because the far stand behind the goal in Tolka had no one in it, the seats are horrible, the steps don't look well, and I even noticed with you guys in Dalymount, you seem to have got some sort of a graffiti artist or, you know, someone who is good at that stuff to draw the bow sign. You've got the Home of Irish Football kind of redone, and there's a little bit of at least some painting done on the far side, which makes it look aesthetically better, and the same in Tolka, because where the press box is located in Dalymount, you're looking out at kind of an empty stand that doesn't really look too nice on the eye. And I suggested, you know, about both grounds, just, you know, ripping out the seats, getting some paint, painting the steps red and black, or painting the steps red and whatever colour Shells want, and just to make it look a little bit better, apart from trying to get more people in.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Jamie, and that's not going to cost the earth, and you're dead right, the aesthetics are so important, especially now with clubs being able to put the video highlights out straight away. Those highlights could go viral, so you need to be putting your best foot forward and have them the game showcases as best you can. I think we've done well in that regard, as you said, with the graffiti, with certain types of the ground, to make it at least a little bit better looking when the cameras are on it. But yeah, that's an area we look at as well. As I said, it can be done with the group of volunteers, with the help of the local community, to clean it up and spruce it up a little bit.
And I suppose the key thing to this whole conversation is, with the way the club is at the moment and lots of involvement in the community and the first team doing so well on the pitch at the start of this season as well, that you don't want to be stopping, you know, new fans as such to come to the games, and they see the buzz around, and, you know, they see the team doing quite well, and then they try to come to the stadium and they can't get in. And I know even for your next home game, the club has been tweeting already to say you need to get tickets online for this match because it will sell out. And that game is, you know, is a next, your next match is home to Pats, which is another Dublin derby, which will be packed as well. And you're trying to encourage people to buy their tickets early and not to turn up expecting to get in, which in previous years, if we're honest, at Dalymount and Richmond and even Tallaght, if they turned up, they would just be able to buy a ticket on the gate. And that's now not the case, at least at the moment.
Yeah, and I think people are going to have to get used to that. I think it's going to be the same in Richmond Park and Tallaght as well. If crowds keep going the way they are, people can't expect just to rock up to Dalymount or whatever ground at 7:30 or 7:45 and expect to get in anymore. And the Pats game will definitely be sold out. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They bring a decent travelling away support. So again, we'll be restricted for our own home fans. So I'd seriously suggest people buy those tickets now. We will definitely sell out to get that online to avoid disappointment. But you're correct. We're on a crest of a wave now. We need to capitalise on that. So people are getting turned away. Well, it's great in the sense that there's demand out there and supply is outstripping demand. How are we going to get those fans back if they're turning up and having a bad experience, not trying to get in, or they're held up in the lane for a long time trying to get in? So we just need to tweak it. We just need to make a few small improvements so we can capitalise on what I believe is a real feel-good factor around the league at the minute.
Yeah, and if any fans from Bowes are listening, Matt, and maybe they didn't get into the last game or they're planning to go to the next game, what sort of a timeline do you have on the plans to maybe increase the home capacity by a certain amount? And, you know, how far along are those discussions? Because as you mentioned, your next home game isn't for a couple of weeks.
Very early stages, Jamie, to be honest. We have to do a little bit of remedial work following discussions with the guards and the local fire brigade in relation to the Rovers game specifically. There's a few safety things that we had to do, so we got those out of the way, and that was our initial priority. The next stage then is to look at the alternative options. So it's only kind of thinking stage at the minute, so it's a little bit away from anything happening. But I'd be hopeful the work that needs to be done could be done quickly.
And Matt, just on a final note, the project for the Dalymount redevelopment overall, myself and Darren spoke on the podcast the week before last. We saw something on Twitter from Councillor Seamus McGrattan just talking about the timeline and, you know, about the stadium being finally completed in October 2022 to October 2023, etc. And you guys, of course, are going to go to Tolka Park for a couple of years and come back. Are you any clearer on timelines? And it was suggested that the clubs might move in when Dalymount, maybe when the new Dalymount, when one stand was done, but that the whole place wasn't finished. And I think one of your colleagues at Bowes, Daniel Lambert, corrected us that all of the offices for both clubs will be based in one stand, so that might be possible. But is there a timeline yet on anything? And of course, with these projects, with so many hoops to jump through, there can always be delays.
Yeah, there's so many variables. I think that the tweet from that councillor was fairly accurate to what we think the timeline is as well. But it's a lot of it is depending on funding. Dublin City Council are ready to go. There's a new report getting commissioned in the near future, I think. So I think the original timeline, while it's delayed a little bit, is still on track. Everyone's still very committed to it. I think the key to the whole project is that ourselves or Shelburne don't move out of our respective grounds while a stadium is getting built. We don't want the situation where we're travelling from ground to ground while Daly Mount is getting redeveloped. We've seen that with Rovers in the past, where they were out of their mill town for 15, 16 years while they were waiting on Tallaght. That would be a travesty. Now, there's no suggestion that is the case, and the council have never suggested otherwise, but that's important. And I think while it might be frustrating for fans that Daly Mount might take a little longer, I'd rather it's done right and done proper, and everyone is kind of, when they go in, they're ready to go with the completed stands, and there have been no kind of delays outside the ground, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so at the moment, according to that timeline from the CEO of Dublin City Council, it says that the demolition will begin around November 2020. So that timeline of Bowes playing their last ever season in the old Daly Mount in 2020, next season, as far as you're concerned, is still the plan?
Yeah, that's still what we're working towards. As you say, things can move, things can happen. But that's what we're working towards, yeah.
And from that point of view, again, the earlier point you made about spending much money on trying to improve Daly Mount in the short term to knock it down in a little while probably doesn't make it a huge amount of sense either. So it's something that you guys will need to plan carefully to try and keep your fans happy and in the stadium for the next year and a half or so before Daly Mount is knocked down and rebuilt. Matt Devaney, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of Luxembourg and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Jamie.
The best League of Ireland podcast in the business. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
You're on the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore here. Very happy to welcome our second Aaron of the day into studio, Aaron Dobbs of Longford Town. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Jamie. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a million for coming in. So tell me about Longford Town so far this season. Interesting start. I was at your big win over Drogheda in which you scored a fox in the box type header. A couple of draws since then. So how would you reflect on the start of the season for yourself and your new club?
Overall, I think it's been a good start. Obviously, Limerick away, it's a tough game. Going down there, it's not easy. It's a big pitch. Tough conditions that day as well. So maybe a draw that day was a fair result. But overall, I think defensively, we've been solid. We can see the one goal in the opening three games. We've started scoring now as well. We scored three against Drogheda, obviously, as you mentioned. And we scored against Cabo as well. Cabo's a tough game as well, obviously. They had a good result against Shells, beating them 3-2 in Tolka. And we knew coming into the game that it was going to be a tough game, especially Cabo, they're a big physical side, tough conditions to play in. But I think in the end, one all result was a fair result, and both teams were deserving of a point.
Yeah, the first division's been interesting so far. Shells haven't, you know, hit the ground running as people expected. Bray have three wins from three and have been really good. And then Longford and Drogheda and the other couple of teams that you might expect to be up towards the top have picked up some points, not others. At Clone have won a couple of games. And last year, I know you played in the league with Wexford, and it was, you know, from the point of view of the club, it was a write-off because the team didn't do so well. How would you look at the first division overall this year, having played a few games in it now, in a team that, you know, hopefully will be challenging at the other end?
Yeah, I mean, the competition this year, it's as strong as ever. We thought it was strong last year, but I think this year it's going to be even tougher. When you look at Bray, they've invested, they've made really good signings. They look like a serious outfit this year. Shells, obviously, as well, as you mentioned, they've pretty much a Premier Division team playing in the first division, so they'll be expecting to go up. But I think we've as good a chance as anyone, and I think it's going to be really tight at the top. And if you look at the division this year, there's no easy games where you can say, oh yeah, that's 3 points. So I think it's going to be really tough this year. And we're hopeful, obviously, that we can go up as always.
Yeah, talk to me about your goal against Drogheda. I mentioned about your ability in the box, and you've been known since you were a kid of just being really bright in and around the box, and you showed that to help your team win Saturday of last week.
Yeah, look, obviously, coming to Longford, you're thinking, I need goals, but played against Limerick and I was frustrated. I felt I probably should have scored, had a chance at the end, and then against Drogheda, played 70-odd minutes and still no goals, so I was getting frustrated, and then when I seen Shane whipping the ball in, I seen the defender at the front post, I was like, just get across him and anything could happen. And thankfully I got my head to it and obviously got the first goal. And you seen a celebration, I don't know if you did or not, but don't know what I done. Jumped up and nearly fell or whatever, but it's just more relief than anything to get that goal. And hopefully it's the first of many this year.
I'm sure I must have been tweeting that you had actually scored at the time when you were celebrating, so I didn't actually see it, but you're going to tell me now, embarrass yourself, go on.
I don't know, yeah. When I scored, I just ran over to the corner where there's no fans in that corner. I don't know why I ran to that corner, but I ran and I kind of tried to jump and throw my hand up to celebrate, but when I jumped, I kind of slipped, so I nearly fell on my arse, but no, I didn't really know what to do. So I need to work on the celebration for the next one, I'm sure.
Yes, indeed. And the next game moved to Stradbroke to play against Cabinteely on Friday night. A 1-1 draw, Sam Verdon back to Longford and scored, and Rob Manley equalised. Now, I said this on Sunday, and I'm going to say it again, the pitch is disgraceful there. It's not, in my opinion, the venue that a League of Ireland game should be being played in at the moment with the rugby. What was it like to play on?
Well, I went out before the game, and I seen it. Literally, there was tyre marks from tractors on the pitch. Like, there's more mud there than grass. I think it's actually dangerous playing on a surface like that, but look, it got passed, so we have to play if we're asked to play, and I think that type of surface doesn't really suit us because we're a team that likes to get the ball down and pass it and play a nice football. But look, I think 1-1 in the end, you probably would have took a look at the conditions and the way the game ended up. Like, but pitch is not great there. And I think it's been like that for a few years now, but still no buzz on it. So
yeah, in fairness to Cabinteely, it does get quite good in the period between the summer months, but unfortunately at the end of the year, at the start of the year, it's just not good, and it's not ideal for any football, passing or even long ball football at all. And as Aaron said, not ideal for Longford. Your next game is on Saturday. I'm going to be down in the City Calling Stadium again to watch you against Galway. They've started quite well, a couple of good performances and maybe not the results they've wanted, but there's a buzz around Galway again, and hopefully they'll bring a little crowd to see your second home game. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, look, Galway are always a good side, good outfit. I don't really know too much about them this year. I think they've made a few signings, but don't know too much about them, but they're picking up good results, like ourselves. So I think it'll be a very interesting game. Two sides that like to play football, so it'll be interesting. It'll be a tight affair.
Now, I've just lost my TV here. If possible, to come in, just pop it on for me so I can actually see what we're doing, because we're going to show Aaron in a moment playing a bit of Ga and stuff like that. Thank you very much, sir. Yes, it must have gone to sleep, but we're are we back?
Been a while.
Yes, we are. We're coming back. We're fine. We'll rock on and keep going. There we go. We're back. Yeah. We haven't lost each other for too long. So, yeah, you're against Galway, and I suppose from your point of view, being a young player in the league, it's just about trying to get consistency of games and then also try and get some goals, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. I think for the last few years, since I went out loan to Wexford, I think injuries have been a big part of my game. So finding that consistency has been tough. I mean, I was with Wexford, I went down, I picked up an injury against UCD, done my ankle. I was out for a good 3 months, I think, and then I came back and it's just for the rest of the season, picked up little niggly injuries, hamstrings, quads. So it's just consistency of games and trying to stay fit for the season. So that's the main aim for this year, to get a good long run of games and hopefully bang in the goals this year. But so far, the injuries have pretty much laid off. I picked up a small injury last week, ironically enough, but it wasn't too serious. So hopefully from now on, for the end of the season, get a good run of games and the goals will start coming in, I'm sure.
Yeah, now one thing I like about doing this podcast and also watching the First Division is, you know, speaking to and hearing about and watching young players who are trying to make a name for themselves in this league, and you're one of those. People might know your name from playing for Shamrock Rovers as a young player and you know, being involved in the early part of what the lads at the club are now doing, to Wexford on loan and now to Longford on a permanent deal. Just talk us through, we can see you there playing for Shamrock Rovers as a younger player too. Talk us through, kind of, you played for their 17s and their 19s, but you were very kind of quickly put into the first team as a young player.
Yeah, so basically I was with Joey's at the time, and we played Shamrock Rovers in schoolboy, obviously, when they had a schoolboy team back a few years ago. And
photo there of you looking very young in a photo shoot.
Bad barn at that.
Go on. So yeah, anyway, you're a young player playing for Joey's and you're against Rovers.
And basically Adam Price came to me. He got a 17s job that time. He's just like, look, would you be interested in signing? There's a few clubs in, I think Bray and the likes were in, and they're like, they want me to sign for the 17th season. It's a short season that time, actually. It was only 2 or 3 months long. But obviously when Shamrock Rovers come calling, you can't really decline it. And spoke with Price, he spoke with Graham Gartland and Shane Robinson and the likes, and it was really a no-brainer to go there. So that season, we'd started pre-season and we didn't really have a captain within the side. So played a few pre-season games. We played Cabo, we beat him 5-0 in a pre-season friendly and I scored a 5. So after that game, Pricey goes to me, look, but I'm just going to give you the captaincy, and because I think you're the one name that will be on the team sheet every week. So he's just like, yeah, Simon, that's grand. Never really been a captain in your life, but that comes calling, you can't decline it. So yeah, I was captain that year, and we actually played Murphy in the first game of the season, and we got beat 2-1 that day. And then since that game, we went unbeaten for the rest of the season. No, it was a good season. And then after that 17 season, went up to the 19s the season after. I played, I think, only 5 or 6 games in the 19s, and had a leaving cert that year, which was in June. So Bradshaw was on to me, whatever, to come in and out of the team. But obviously education was my priority at that time. And I just wanted to get the leaving cert done in June. So as soon as the leaving cert was finished, I went in with the boys, and I was lucky enough to play, I think it was 11 games or something towards the second half of the season, and I think I got 3 goals that time, which is not a bad return for a 17-year-old, but it's a good taste for it. It made me hungry. I wanted more of it. Full-time football was, I was really liking it. And after that season, the season after that, in pre-season, I played a few pre-season games, and the start of the season I was in the stands. I wasn't really getting a look in, so I just went to Brad's and I was just like, look, I need to be playing games really at this age, because I've obviously progressed from the underage system. I was playing first team football, so I got a taste for it. I just wanted to be playing every week, and I said to him about the possibility of a loan. A few options, but Wexford was one of them, and I literally live about 5 minutes from the pitch, so I was just like, might as well go home, enjoy football, see the family. And I did that. I don't know if you could call it a successful spell at Wexford, but I enjoyed it. And obviously now I'm back at Longford, so I'm just looking to get back playing nice football and hopefully challenge and win something this year.
So see, at that time when you're at Rovers and you're scoring goals every week, and on certain occasions scoring 4 or 5, and it wasn't the only time in that season that you did that, and you're kind of making a name for yourself, and there's talk about you on the club social media channels, and you know the other teams are looking out for you on the team sheet, and they can see that you're a really good player, and you're in the first team as kind of a 17-year-old. Does that add any extra kind of mental, mental questions and you know things in your own head, or does it make you want to actually? I remember last week speaking to Keelan Dillon, and he said when people were aware of me, maybe want to do even better to kind of prove them right.
Yeah, no, I think when people see you and to see your name on a team sheet and they're having doubts, I take that as a compliment, like, and I feel I've nothing to prove to them, like, because they've seen what I've done, they know what I can do. So I just go and play a normal game and just let the football speak for itself, really. I see it as a bonus when people look at you like that.
Yeah, now Aaron mentioned Wexford there, and we're going to see a little photo of him in action in a sport that's not actually 11-a-side sport, but the 15 against 15. There he is. Tell me about this, because a lot of football players and Gaa players and all the sports as young lads play different sports, but you've played the old Gaelic football at a decent level.
Ah, yeah, being a country boy, you're obviously tied in with the Gaa as well as other sports. But I think Gaa was originally my sport when I was a youngster, and I really started taking up football seriously when I was 14, 15, 16, before I moved to Joey's. But no, Gaa's always been there. Like, played in the off season, I played football, and then in the summer months I'd play the Gaa. Obviously, I can't do that now with the League of Ireland the way it's run. But being a country boy, you're expected to play Gaa, and I think playing Gaa underage helped me. Maybe more athletic, just kept you fit in the off season, kept you taking over. And that picture there was actually under 18 county championship. It was the quarter final, I'm really sure, against Offaly. Unfortunately, I got beat that day, but I think that was just previous to signing for Rovers, so it's one of my last games playing Gaa.
Where did you play in Gaa? Because you're obviously a number 9 on a football pitch.
I was centre forward.
Okay, so, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, just like scoring, you know. So
this is going to sound like a really stupid question, right? But I don't know if it is. Any similarities between being a centre forward in soccer and a full forward in Gaelic? And were there any bits of both games that you felt you were really good at?
Oh, yeah, I think being a forward in Gaa, you have to have good movement to lose a defender and whatever, and obviously you have to be accurate to take your score. So I think it all ties in together, and I think I benefited from being involved in Gaa as well. And as I mentioned, it made me more athletic, obviously, because Gaa is a really demanding sport in terms of fitness. So I think I benefited from my Gaa days.
Yeah, and I was just saying, we got a photo, myself, yourself and Aaron McInniff, and you're quite a big lad, to be fair to you. So you're playing the Ga and you sign for Shamrock Rovers, and it's something that's very common among young players, and interested to get your view on it, that once you come a certain age, you do need to specialise in one sport. And was that a decision that you made, that the club made, that you said, well, if I want to be a professional footballer now, I can't risk injury or fatigue or whatever, or the possibility of a clash between games and training between the Gaelic and the soccer?
Yeah, no, actually it was, to be fair, it was my father that made a decision for me.
Okay.
I didn't really have a say in. He was just like, no, you're going to stick to this, I want you to go all the way in it and whatever. But I was actually more interested in the Ga, but he just led me on the football course. And he's just like, no, you want to play this, I think you're better at this. I was only 13 or 14 at the time. When I was playing for Joy's at the time, I used to sneak home. And he used to hide my bag out in the ditch out in the front. And I wake up in the morning before everyone else and sneak out and get the gear bag and go off and play a game match at our GA match at the weekends. So I was always trying to keep it under the radar from the parents, but I think in the end I found out. And my father wasn't too happy when he found out, but look, I enjoy playing Ga too much really to give it up. But no, it was my father that set me on the football course.
And now, yeah. given you're a couple of years kind of along that path now of football, is Ga still something that you ever play? Do you ever go out to the park to, you know, kick a ball around, or is it solely now on the football or the soccer?
Not really, no, because I'm not living at home now. Obviously, I'm in college as well, so I'm not really around my mates. All my mates are Ga heads as well, so up here I'm just purely football, especially with Longford, we train so much, so there's not really no Ga anymore. It's just pure football.
So let's move now to Longford Town, who you're currently playing for, and Longford announced in the off-season that you joined the club, and a photo of yourself and Neil Fenn, I'm sure we'll see in a moment, when you were signing your contract. Why Longford, and what sort of influence did Neil, who was also a top striker in his day, particularly around the box, have on your decision to sign there? There you are with Neil in his office when you signed in the off-season.
Yeah, look, I think there was a few clubs onto my agent in the off-season. And obviously, when Neil came along, it was a big moment for me, because I've heard of Neil and what he's done on the pitch, and obviously I could learn off him as well. So my agent just rang me. He's just like, look, we'll organise a meeting. So I had a meeting with Neil, and he told me what his plans are with me. He'd do one-on-one sessions with me, do finishing, whatever movement, give me tips. And then I remember from previous year playing with Wexford, playing against Longford, to play nice football, like to get the ball down and move it, and they want to play football. So I think it was a no-brainer really in the end, especially when I was living in Dublin at the time and we trained in Leixlip, so it wasn't too far away, as opposed to travelling to Longford for training. So I think it was a no-brainer in the end with Neil and the football that Longford play. So I think it was the right decision in the end.
Yeah, because Neil Fenn, as well as being the Longford manager, owns a coaching company called Path to Pro, and previously to that had a company, I think it was called First for Strikers or something like that, and clearly he knows his way around the goal. Since you've signed, what sort of kind of work has he done with you, maybe either on the pitch or maybe one-to-one in meetings and you know, video work to help you? You spoke earlier on about your movement and your ability in the box, and I'm sure he's trying to add other aspects to your game as well.
Yeah, I think when I said to people about Neil Fender, to tell me about his incredible hold-up play, the way he used to just pin defenders and his touch would stuck to his foot, and once he pinned the defender, it wasn't getting around him, like he was just holding the ball up. So I think my hold-up game is coming a bit better since I signed. Just pinning defenders, midfielders playing off me or whatever. So Neil's been good. He's been giving me tips since the start of the season. I'm sure he'll continue to give me more and I'll improve.
Yeah, now I've told the story before on the podcast, but Neil Fenn also plays futsal, or did play futsal, and the biggest arse I've seen in a football pitch in a long time, and he just gets that arse in and knocks people off, and that's a skill. On a serious note, I'm being a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it is a skill to be able to get your arse and get your body actually into a defender to win free kicks, and as you just said there, kind of link the game.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've seen him on the training pitch. He joins in sometimes actually with sessions as well, and he still play a bit, but I'm sure not as much as in the past, but no, that arse is still there, and he's still sticking out in training, and I think the centre halves and trainers struggling to get around him still. So
I know lots of League of Ireland clubs do extra work for strikers, extra finishing work, and maybe sometimes have some finishing competitions. Do you guys do that, and does Neil himself ever get involved?
No, we do a bit after each session. We do a bit of finishing, but I think it's more so me and the centre halves to join in. John Manley loves a bit of finishing himself, but we do the finishing amongst ourselves, but the odd time Neil will take me and do one-on-one sessions to give me little tips. So, no, the finishing is amongst ourselves at the end of each session. So.
And you've also been finishing some goals as well in college. Just talk to us about what college you're in, what course you're doing, and the football there, because we spoke about school and the importance you place in your education for your leaving cert, and that's allowed you to have a scholarship and play football in the evening times and also have a full-time education.
Yeah, well, I'm studying in DIT, or if you want to call it TUD now, I don't know what you want to call it, but I'm in DIT, I'm studying engineering. When I done my leaving cert, I didn't really plan on going to college. I just wanted to play football, like. But in the end, I opened my CO last year, and I decided to go to college. And how the college football came about, I actually wasn't intending on playing any sport in college. I was just going to study, but the day previous to our first game against DCU, Gavin Fleming, our coach at the time, gave me a buzz. He's just like, "How we are, and we're stuck for players. Would you mind coming?" So I no bother, I'll give you a hand. So I showed up that day, I'm sure there was 15 or 16 players, I had enough players. Like, so he goes, "I'm just going to stick you up top just for this game, see how you get on." So we won that game 4-0, I scored a hat-trick. And ever since that game, Gavin was just having the phone, he was just like, "Come on, please, I'll get you a scholarship, whatever." So I was like, "Ash, might as well." So that came about, and no, college football is good. I've enjoyed it. It's just, you go out and express yourself, like, there's no pressure on you, just go out and play your natural football, and you're playing with your mates almost, so it's good. I've enjoyed it.
And there's games across the period of like October, November time when the League of Ireland is non, or most of it's not on, so you keep yourself taken over there, and then you're in League of Ireland pre-season, plus if you get to knockout stages of college games, you're actually in kind of quarterfinals then, and like even this week and last week there's been semi-finals, and there's also some finals to come as well. Is that a balance you have to try and strike from a physical point of view and a fatigue point of view to ensure that you're not, you know, you're in the middle of pre-season, you've got Longford friendlies, and also, you know, because of a scholarship, you're required to play for your college, and at times the players can be stuck in the middle?
Yeah, no, I mean, when I met Neil in previous signing and we had that meeting, I just discussed to him, "Look, I'm in college football at the moment, I'm on a scholarship, and I need a scholarship money or whatever for the year." So it was a big part in me signing, and he was just like, "No, don't worry about that. I'll give you the time off that you need for college football, because we're only in pre-season, so as long as you're playing games at the college, you don't really need to play with us, because you won't play 90 either way." So he's like, "No, as long as you're playing 90, I won't interfere with the college football." So Neil's been good to me in that sense, where he's given me the freedom to go play college football and balance the boat.
And how are the studies themselves in terms of the course? And you said you're doing engineering, is it?
Yeah, I'm doing civil engineering. It's tough. It's 29 hours a week, so it's fairly full on. Like, it's 9 to 6 majority of the days. So Neil, in that sense as well, has given me the benefit of the doubt when I show up to let the train. He's just like, "Nah, it's grand. I know what the course is you're doing and all." And he knows I'm in till 6 every day. So the club have been good in every way, balancing the boat, the college and the football. So
finally, folks, this will make our listeners and viewers feel quite old. Aaron is born in 1999, correct?
Correct, yeah.
20?
20, yeah.
So lots of years to go on the legs on a football pitch, and you've had a, you know, really good experience so far, as you mentioned, at Rovers, you know, as a young player at Wexford, as a, you know, in a year that you've struggled, and now, you know, early into your time at Longford, plus college too. What does the future hold for you as a 20-year-old young footballer in Ireland?
Not really sure. I haven't really given much thought to it, but just get the degree first anyway, and continue to play League of Ireland, and just progress as much as I can, really. And as I said, the degree is probably the most important thing, because, as you know, anything could happen. So as long as I get the degree, and hopefully just put head down in pure football then from then.
3-year course?
3-year with the option to a further 2 years.
Okay, and are you in first year?
First year, yeah.
Okay, so a little bit to go. And have you found that balance okay between, you would have had school and football, but now, you know, I'm sure the academic requirements in college are more, and you're now, you know, Longford are, in inverted commas, amateur and part-time, but really you're full-time, like you're training 3 nights a week, you're in, you've got your games and stuff, it's a fairly hectic schedule.
Yeah, I mean, my course is fairly demanding, as you can imagine. Engineering is a lot of assignments, a lot of projects, so the time, I don't really have time, it's just pure college and football. College from 9 to 6, and then training, you train from maybe from 7 till about 9:30, so that's pretty much my week, my schedule, fairly full on, so.
And we spoke to Aaron McAneff about, you know, moving to Dublin and having to learn to cook and stuff. How do you, you know, having lived at home with your mum, like, how do you, like, plan your week? Are you cooking? Are you living in digs? Are you living in an apartment? And again, if you're out from, you know, half eight in the morning until half eight, 9 o'clock at night. It's a long day, and to perform at the level you need to from a sporting point of view, you need to eat properly and all that sort of stuff, and try and get enough sleep plus study.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been doing it for a good few years now, because obviously when I signed for Rovers, I was only 17. And I think I was living up there by myself at the time, so I was actually cooking at that age as well for myself. So it's actually something I enjoy doing, cooking. So from past 3 or 4 years, I've been living alone and living in around my mates. So I do a good lot of the cooking myself. Obviously, it's hard. You have the so-called college life, where all your mates are going out during the week and all, and you have to stay in, commit to football. But it's something I enjoy. I actually enjoy cooking, so it's not too bad.
The second professional footballer in a row to tell us they enjoy cooking. I wish I was like you. So Aaron McInniff is a steak speciality. What, if I was asked you to cook your main meal for yourself, what's on the menu?
Just a bit of bolognese, I think. A bit of bolognese, eh? Handy enough.
Well, Aaron Dobbs, thanks many for coming in. Really great chatting to you, and best luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, Jamie. Cheers.
Yeah, you're on the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. It's episode 6 here. Very finally, some breaking news. Stephen Kenny has announced his first Ireland under-21 squad. Just come into my email here at 5-3 on Wednesday afternoon. 7 current League of Ireland players in it. Some of the head-on news. Gavin Bazunu, goalkeeper, just signed for Man City, who's 16-17, is actually in the squad. From a League of Ireland point of view, Bohemians Dara Leahy has been named by Stephen Kenny in the squad. Trevor Clark from Shamrock Rovers. Liam Scales of UCD is also in there. Jamie Lennon from St. Patrick's Athletic, defensive midfielder. Danny Mandrew from Bowes, who of course scored that brilliant goal as well. And who are the other two? Let me see. Simon Power, ex-UCD, is also in it. Troy Parrott with Spurs is also here. You can see the full squad right now on the sports pages of offtheball.com. And yeah, it's a really interesting squad that Stephen Kenny has named for his first Euro qualifier, which takes place at Tallaght Stadium on the 24th of March at home to Luxembourg. Now, that's just about it for episode 6 of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. We'll finally round up the fixtures for this coming weekend. The Premier Division first, because that is the league that we give our main focus to, and there's games taking place this weekend, all happening on Friday. It's Cork City against Bowes in Turner's Cross at 7:45. At the same time, Derry City host Dundalk. It's UCD against Finn Harps in a really important game at the bottom for both teams, while Waterford down at the RSC host Harry Kenny's St. Pat's. And one game at 8 o'clock, a game I'll be at, which Aaron McInniff will be playing in, we hope. It's Shamrock Rovers against Sligo Rovers at Tallaght Stadium. In terms of the First Division, Aaron Dobbs will be in action for Longford on Saturday. It's a 7:30 kickoff down there in the City Calling Stadium against Galway. Looking forward to taking in that game. The other four games all take place at 7:45 on Friday. It's Bray against Athlone Town. It's Drogheda United hosting Cabinteely. Limerick against Cove Ramblers. And Shelburne host Wexford. Speaking to Kieran Kilduff in Tauchla Park on Monday, I fancy him to score a few goals in that one against a Wexford team who really struggled and conceded lots of goals so far this season. So that's it for our Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and to all of our guests. We heard from Matt Devaney from Bohemians, as well as Keith Long and the Channel 4 now famous Dinny Corcoran, plus Aaron Dobbs and Aaron McInniff. More from all of those in the podcast section of offtheball.com. And we're back with you next Wednesday, folks. See you later. Bye-bye.
Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.